we were one of the first Shopify clients, right? So that's when Shopify was just getting popular. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we started from $2,000. You know, I borrowed $2,000 from my roommate. I had no money and I didn't know how to drive any traffic online. I didn't know how to build a website. So I started really selling shades out of my backpack on the beach. And I started selling shades at pool parties here in San Diego the boardwalk. So I built the brand offline just through like grassroots guerrilla marketing, putting stickers on street signs, selling shades out of my backpack, and just reinvesting. And then as social media started to really develop, that's when we really started to learn how to use those tools as, you know, lifestyle marketing channels for us. And we started to build our website online and then started driving customers and figuring out how to drive traffic.
Welcome to the Winning E-Commerce Experience Show, where it's all about creating a brand that your customers love so they keep coming back. This show is brought to you by DataQ. Your store experience begins with your homepage. DataQ improves your conversion rate up to 30% by showing each visitor a personalized homepage based on their interest. And now, your host, Shahram Anver.
Hey guys, today we have the CEO and shaderator of San Diego's popular eyewear brand, Blenders Eyewear. Jess Fisher, very warm welcome to you.
Thank you, man. Stoked to be here.
Yeah, we were just talking about how there's worse places to be quarantined there compared to San Diego, right?
I mean, absolutely, dude. Like, it's sunny here. The beaches have just opened. Summer's kind of at the, you know, at the very beginning stages, and I'm feeling the energy is starting to kind of come back to life. So it's exciting.
That's good to know. And I think pretty much, I don't want to say that we're past sort of the worst of it or anything like that, but I guess we're kind of settling into the new normal, if that makes sense. Do you get that idea too?
Yeah. No, for sure. I mean, I'm out and about. I think people are kind of coming to, you know, fruition with this, and they're accepting it, and they're starting to come, you know, they're making peace with it, and they're becoming happy, right? Like, people want their lives back. They want to go back to work. They want their freedom back. And at least down here, I'm seeing a lot of newfound energy, newfound positivity, and a lot of smiles. And I'm just kind of feeding off the energy. So it's been great.
That's awesome. I think I could probably say the same over here. Like, probably I usually do this like walk maybe every day, and then in the last week I've seen so many more people at the park than it was before. So it's good. I think we've all been sort of waiting to get back to like a nicer headspace. But listen, like, we can chat about this, but I really want to get into sort of a quick intro on you. You know, who is Chase and why did you found Blenders Eyewear? Tell us a little bit about the brand.
Yeah, so my name is Chase Fisher. I'm from Santa Barbara. I moved to San Diego for college, and after college, I started Blenders. You know, the whole idea with Blenders was to create a really cool sunglasses brand that was middle price point, that really reflected San Diego and its lifestyle that we live down here. You know, at the time I started it, I was a surf instructor, so I couldn't find any shades that I could afford. All the shades were like $200, and I was a broke college student, so I couldn't afford any of those shades. And so I really wanted to bring something to market that was new, you know, and not only, you know, new, but was actually affordable, right? Because it just didn't exist. So that's kind of the whole notion behind Blenders, and, you know, what better place to do it than San Diego.
So how'd you go from a surf instructor to an e-commerce guy? I mean, that's got to be an interesting story, right?
Totally. I mean, so the whole idea came from a nightclub, actually. I was going to see one of my favorite DJs at the nightclub, and I was wearing some $5 beater shades I bought from Target.
Right.
And everyone in the club was coming up to me asking about my shades. And they're like, oh my God, where'd you get those? Like, let me try them on. And that's where the whole idea came from. And I was just working as a surf instructor at the time. So I was at the beach all day seeing sunglasses. And so I saw a real need to create this product and create a brand that was, you know, San Diego based, but also affordable. Mm-hmm. And so we built social media pages and just started really hustling. You know, that was right at the beginning of the rise of social media, Facebook, Instagram, things like that. So, you know, we kind of hopped on those platforms, built a brand, you know, through those platforms, and just started networking like crazy.
Awesome. I mean, so I'm trying to get into, because the thing with e-commerce is, especially now where there's all these maybe material out there saying, you know, it's easy, get online and you can sell. And I mean, honestly, it's not like it takes patience. It takes, so like, what did that look like? So you, the moment someone, like all these people came to you and were like, hey, like these shades are really cool. You've sort of maybe got that light bulb in your head thinking, okay, like this seems to be something people really want. Maybe let's like jump into, what was that initial period like when you thought, okay, I can probably try. Did you immediately think e-commerce, or did you think, look, I'm going to get this stuff and give it to stores? Like what do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, we were one of the first Shopify clients, right? So that's when Shopify was just getting popular. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we started from $2,000. You know, I borrowed $2,000 from my roommate. I had no money and I didn't know how to drive any traffic online. I didn't know how to build a website. So I started really selling shades out of my backpack on the beach. And I started selling shades at pool parties here in San Diego on the boardwalk. So I built the brand offline just through like grassroots guerrilla marketing. Putting stickers on street signs, selling shades out of my backpack, and just reinvesting. And then as social media started to really develop, that's when we really started to learn how to use those tools as, you know, lifestyle marketing channels for us. And we started to build our website online and then started driving customers and figuring out how to drive traffic. And that was all done through social media. So we didn't have any business plan. We didn't have any experience. We're figuring it out as we went.
I love that you went out on the beach with the backpack and started selling stuff. I think that's like hustler, like A-level hustling.
One pair, one style, one customer at a time.
Hey, so when you were doing that, did you already have a website and you thought, you know what, my job is to like move my product and not really get the website working? Or did you start selling on the back with your backpack and then build the money and then get a website? Like what's the order? How did that happen?
Yeah, so we put up our website, right? But the website's meaningless if there's no traffic.
Yeah.
We had no way to drive traffic. So we had to make sales. So the only way we can make sales, we're doing live events in San Diego, selling shades organically on the beach, popping up a booth at different street fairs, things like that, and really building the brand offline. And in like a natural form, right? And then we really migrated to Facebook. And with Facebook, we built a Facebook page and had like 2,000 fans before even having a product. So we started figuring out, like, do we have demand? Do we have interest? And we started putting out designs. And those designs started gauging a bunch of interest. And so we started building it organically through Facebook. And once our product was ready and our website was ready, then we basically started launching and selling. It was very slow at the beginning. Like we were selling more shades offline than we were online. But that's kind of the process, you know, really hard to organically build online when you don't know what you're doing and you don't have any money to drive traffic. The only way to do it is grassroots level. And so we started migrating those customers online, purchasing online, and then we just started building one customer at a time, telling friends to bring us another friend, sort of things like that. Just like super, super grassroots. I mean, this is as like bare bones as it gets.
And that's
the only way I knew how to start.
Yeah. I mean, because the way I'm imagining this, it's like you were selling product offline and then you were continuing to build stuff online. And I guess there was like this curve where offline sales and online sales and eventually online sales beat offline sales. And you were like, okay, we have an online business now. So totally. I don't know, you know, draw the point wherever you feel comfortable in terms of saying, okay, we've got a working website, but how long did that roughly take from, okay, I've got a Shopify website up to, okay, I'm getting some reasonable traffic here and I think this could work?
It took a long time, man. I mean, there was multiple days at the beginning where we had $0 in sales where we're just like, what the hell are we doing? Like, what are we doing? You know what I mean? I would say about, you know, a couple years to really get your site in a good place, you know, to really get consistent sales. And like every startup brand, like you try and launch online, realize it's hard, and then you go the wholesale route, you know? Right. So we started going wholesale because we didn't know how to drive traffic and we thought that's what everyone does. And then we figured out that was a bad idea because it's super capital intensive and it's, you know, it's not complementary to a startup business with like terms and your prices are really slashed and you lose a lot of control. And so we had a couple bad hiccups at the beginning with wholesale, and then we really focused on building it online. And then Instagram came up, and then that's when things really took shape. That's when I started to really develop a visual identity for the brand. That's when I really started to develop, content for the brand, working with photographers, working with athletes and DJs. And that's when things really took shape. And I just went crazy on Instagram early on.
So Facebook, Instagram, and it sounds like you did a lot of influencer marketing. Like you really found people who identified with the brand you wanted to make, right?
Yeah, you know, when Facebook, you know, changed their algorithm to where organic traffic was basically non-existent, then Instagram really got popular. So we migrated to Instagram, and then that gave us a real like visual identity and kind of brand look that we kind of used to just develop and build, build a relationship and build content and connect with customers.
Right. And I, you know, this is a point that I hear very often, and I always like to sort of like just underline that, you know, e-commerce is not about getting your products online and making millions the next day. It just doesn't work that way. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's sort of trying to convince you that that's how it could be, but it's not. So, with all the caveats that, you know, it takes work and all of this stuff, there's obviously mistakes that were made, right? Like you mentioned the wholesale route and things like that. So I'd like to ask you this question where, you know, if you could speak to Chase a couple of years ago, like you've just made this website with what you know now, what advice would you give him? Like, hey man, like do this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, given the times that we're in too with COVID and stuff, like obviously, thank God we didn't go the wholesale route. Like, thank God, because we probably wouldn't have been around if we did that, right? Because now all the stores are closed and it's just a mess. So digital now is more important than ever before. If you weren't digital before, now you have no other option, basically. So I'm glad we didn't go P. You know, that's another thing that we got stuck on that kind of came back to bite us in the ass was trademark infringement internationally. You know, Blender started to get a lot of popularity international quickly. And we didn't even have our US business really up and running before international started taking off even bigger. So we got caught with some bad infringement in some international countries there. You know, we ran all of our products through one manufacturer at the beginning, which was a disaster because we were so reliant on one factory. And there was times where that factory got, you know, cyclones twice in 1 month and they almost got wiped off. So we had a lot of delays when trying to scale. So diversifying our manufacturing supply early on would have been a better choice. You know, for me, I've been wearing a lot of hats, and that's been a challenge for me, like letting go in terms of just being a founder, right? Like this brand is infused with passion for me, and I love it. So it's been very hard for me to let go over the years. So I think earlier on, if I would have done that, it would have been easier for me, right? We probably would have scaled a little bit quicker, but I was so like, you know, I wanted things done a certain way. I wanted things to look a certain way. And so I was scared to let go. And that's what, you know, me personally, I could have worked on better. We had a lot of failed partnerships over the years too, of just like, we had a partnerships with the Chargers. The year that they, you know, that they suddenly moved to LA, and that was a huge fiasco. And we had another, you know, we had some issues on the manufacturing side going through third parties who basically, you know, stole a bunch of money from us. And, you know, so there's just so many lessons that you learn along the way, man, that, you know, you got to go and look back and be, but be thankful for them, because, you know, that's how you learn, you know? And you learn by doing, and that's the best teacher.
And I mean, it makes you who you are, right? Like you got to get burned before you know where to go and where not to go. Like you can't be green and you know, basically survive in this crazy, very competitive world.
I mean, look, like when I first started, I thought I was 22, 23. I was this young buck, confident kid. I was like, okay, we're going to knock it out of the park on day one. We're going to sell every pair on the first day of launch. I launched at the San Diego State Entrepreneur Fair with 300 pairs, which was our first order of sunglasses. I brought all 300 pairs that day because I literally thought I was going to sell all 300 pairs. I sold barely 10 pairs, 10 pairs. And I was like, holy shit. That was the first time I got punched in the face. And I was like, okay, this is going to be a lot harder than I thought. But yeah, man, I mean, that's how you learn, you know. It's like all those humbling times make you stronger in the end.
So advice from Chase would be get punched in the face a lot as much as you can and learn.
Oh my God. I mean, that's your finest teacher, man. I mean, yeah, you got to learn by doing. You have to get knocked down. You have to be resilient. I mean, advice is also like just knowing that success is, is messy, right? I mean, it's a dirt path. It's not this, you know, beautiful paved path. Like, it's very messy. It's very daunting on a lot of your relationships. It's very time consuming mentally. It's the hardest thing I've ever done, but it's also the most rewarding thing I've ever done. You don't know it until you actually give it in and try it. You know what I mean?
And I think there's a really big relationship between what you just said versus letting go, right? Because when you're starting, I guess you're probably the only one who believes in yourself. You, like, everybody who also agrees with you is probably doing it because they love you or they're really good friends with you and they want to be supportive. But like that fire is really coming from you. So So when you're thinking about sort of letting go, is it also about a thing of trying to find people you can trust with your vision? So that was that a big part of, until you found someone you could be like, you know what, I trust you to do what I think, then now I can let go? Is that a big part of it?
100%, man. And that's something that I've struggled with over the years, is like, I can find good athletes and good influencers all day and photographers, but when it comes to like hiring good people to work for you, that's been very challenging for me. So like, it's a blessing and a curse, right? Like, it's, I think it's important to know the positions that you're hiring for, to know enough about them so you know what you're looking for, right? Versus the person that can just delegate everything and they just like are really good at delegating. And that's been hard. So yeah, finding people that you can trust, finding people that can see your vision. But it took me so long to come to terms with the fact that no one's going to care as much as me. No one's going to think like me. No one's going to work as hard as me. And I just blocked that out of my mind. I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to find people that can think like me. And it's just not the case. So, yeah. And it's, I've been working on that a lot more. Obviously our team is 30 people now, so I've done a better job at letting go recently, but it took me a long time and it's still a challenge for me.
I mean, in the end, it's your baby, right? So no one's going to love your baby more than you.
Right. Totally.
So maybe we can talk about what you learn with hiring, right? So I think especially with people sort of coming in new, obviously hiring should be the last thing on their mind while they're trying to build that brand and try to get things going. You want to try to be as frugal as possible and not spend everything you have. But let's say you're in this stage now where you think, all right, it's growing, things are going well. How would you approach hiring? Like, would you look for things that you're not good at, or would you just look for things that you can't keep up with? Like, how do you prioritize? Because you can't just hire 30 people on one day, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think like earlier on, right? Like I said, we bootstrapped, so we didn't have any money to hire people. Mm-hmm. So we kind of had to learn the roles on our own, right? Like, I was doing marketing, I was doing branding, I was doing manufacturing, I was doing fulfillment and shipping. Like, I was doing customer service. I was doing all those jobs because I had to, because we couldn't hire anyone. So I think it's important to understand the roles that you're hiring for, mm-hmm. and hire out exactly what you need during those roles, right? If you've never done that job, you don't really know what to look for. You know what I mean?
Good point.
So I think for us, like, now it's about like finding people that are better than me in certain areas, finding people that, you know, can do people. Before, we couldn't hire anyone that were good. We just had no money. So now it's about what are we looking for? What's that value going to bring? And making sure that we hire slow and fire fast. You know, it's like, I've always been this guy, like, I think that's super important. Like, you know, with e-com and things changing, you want to just move all the time and move quickly, but it's super, super important to find the right person. And you never really know until they actually take their first day, you know, like, so hiring is very hard for me. I'm not going to lie. That's not my strong point. I've never been good at it. I'm working at it, but it's a lot of work, man. You got to have a lot of trust. You have a lot of time. You got to trust the process. You got to go through all the motions and vet the right people, and take a risk, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think especially for founders, right? Like, I mean, as a founder myself, I know that like when I hire someone, it's very important for me to spend a lot of time with them and tell them about sort of the brand, the vision and things like that. So it's a lot of investment from you personally. When So that highest low fire fast thing really resonates with me as well, because it's very costly. If you end up getting 10 people and you have to, eight out of order, whatever it is, not working out, you've spent so much time with all 10 of them to find this out, right?
Yeah. And as your team gets bigger, right, especially as you start hiring, like, you know, people on the executive team or like leadership roles,
yeah,
you know, if you start swinging and missing on multiple hires like that, it's bad for the culture, and it kind of dampens your trust internally. So, I made some bad hires over the years that I had to, you know, explain and fix, but, I've learned from them, and I'm trying to do my best to bring good people with good energy and that can see the vision into the organization that can also lead as well.
So where are you at? I mean, I know you said that this is not your strong suit and you're getting better at it, but obviously I think for over the years you've learned a lot. So for people sort of just coming into this space, are there any sort of tips that you can share where, you know, you found maybe it's the type of questions you have, or maybe it's sort of some activities that you do with them that give you a better sense of if there's a fit with you and them? Like, have you thought about this a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think just like, you know, conversing with them on a natural level, like, how are they as people? You know, like, do you get along with them? What kind of hobbies do they have? Like, what is their outside life look like beyond professional work? You know, like,
right.
Are they aligned with the brand? Do they listen to the music we listen to? Do they like to travel? Like, you know, what kind of brands are they wearing? Like, just like basic customer stuff, right? Like, how much of a customer are they? You know,
right.
At the end of the day, you almost want to hire your customers as people to, you know, work for you, because they're brand advocates.
That's awesome.
So, you know, for me, that's been kind of a focus, right? It's just really trying to focus on what's their interests, who are they as people, where do they come from, like, what's their background, right. what motivates them, what inspires them, like those types of questions. Where before I was so concerned on like which role they have to do or which part in the organization they need to play or what time they're coming in, like all that stuff is irrelevant if they don't fit with the culture and your vibe, you know.
Yeah. You know, I used to be in consulting, and one of the things that people used to say there is, you know, because you end up having to travel a lot. So when you're hiring someone, you kind of have this question in the back of your head. Do I want to be stuck in an airport with you? Like, would that be a cool experience, or would I hate it? And it sounds similar to what you're talking about, right? Like, is there that fit? Like, do I want to hang out with you outside work? Because we're going to be hanging out so much. It's a bit like a relationship, really.
Totally. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think this is a really good point. But let's go back to your brand, and I think that's sort of the more interesting part of it. So, you came in, and I think it's really awesome again that you were selling, you know, out of a backpack. I guess what happens when you're putting yourself out there, and you know, people talk about this a lot, is that you have these assumptions coming in when you're building a brand, and then you talk to the customer who you want to sell it to, and then you learn from them, and then you sort of adjust mentally as well, right? So, you know, what did that look like? Like, you went to the nightclub and everybody, you know, people really interested. So obviously you had this idea, and then you went with 300 glasses and you couldn't sell any. And then you sort of went the hustling route. What was that sort of like the expectation, and what was that reality check that made you change those assumptions?
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, man, like, I've always been this, like, I always chase perfection, right? I mean, it's like, right. It's probably not a good thing, but it also holds you to the highest standard because you want to be the best. Mm-hmm. So for the first 8 months, I literally wanted to perfect the sunglass. Like, before we even had a product, like, I spent so much wasted time trying to perfect our product before we even came to market.
Right.
You know, and they say if your product's perfect, you waited too long to launch, right? So for me, I had a realization when I got approval from, you know, San Diego State. I met with one of the entrepreneur guys out there.
Right.
And, you know, he mentioned to me, like, Chase, what are you doing? Like, why are you spending so much time trying to perfect this? So, so I did that, you know, I launched. And our logo was like far below where it was supposed to be placed once we first launched. And I was like, oh my God, we're not going to make it because our logo is like a centimeter below where it was supposed to be. And I was just getting so caught up in all this like crap that like was so, it was just minutia. There was no real like logic behind it. You know, I was just trying to perfect this. And that slowed me down, man. That slowed me down. And I wasted a lot of time doing that. So that's some advice I would also give. Like, just go start. Like, you know, you're going to reinvent your brand. You're going to reinvent your product a million times. And it's important that you don't waste like valuable time doing that. So for me, that was a big learning lesson. And you know, as you get customers, as you start to expand, you start to learn so much from them, right?
I think that's really hard to do though. I'm sorry to jump in, but I think from everything I've, because I've gone through the same thing, right? Like every time you build a business, I think it's just, you want it to be perfect and you don't want people to think less of you because it's an extension of you that you're building. It's like, you know, it's your baby. So from what I've seen, it makes sense to get sort of like a trusted friend to tell you, stop working on it, release it. Because somehow I think it's very hard for you to do that yourself. I don't know if that makes sense, because it sounds like your friend did that for you.
Yeah, and like when you're so close to it all the time, like you're just like, you become so caught up in it, you know, and you just kind of lose focus. But those details really don't matter, right? And if you're starting from the ground up, you know, it's okay. Like your customers are going to work with you. Like they know you're just starting. Like you're going to develop that trust. Like we put out tons of bad product at the beginning, but we were transparent. We were open about it. We were like, this is our first business. We're, you know, we're going to be big one day, but just work with us. And, you know, if you take care of your customers and you're honest and you have good integrity and you're genuine, you know, it's okay. They're going to work with you through and they're going to stay with you. However, in today's day and age, a bad product is a bad product, you know, and you can't put out a bad product because word of mouth and, you know, social media, everyone has a voice and it just travels way faster. So you do got to put out a good product, probably a lot more now than once we started.
So really, I guess the key here is good enough. And what the definition is really up to you and up to your customer. But like, don't try to be too perfect, but you also don't want to release total crap.
Totally. Yeah. Exactly.
I know that's not very helpful to everyone listening, but you know, I think it really depends on your niche, right? I guess, like, you know, for instance, there's some really obvious ones. Like if you were doing, I don't know, medical stuff, then obviously it has to be really, really good. But if you're doing a product which can afford to fail and you could just replace it in case it does fail, then that's cool. Like it reduces the barrier of, so figure out what that level is for you in your industry, right?
Totally. Yeah. And you're going to make it better. You know, you're going to reinvent it. You're going to refine it. You know, it's like a website. It's never done. You know, your product's never done.
Right. One of the things which I'm learning these days with marketing is that, like, you know, you started a while ago, but marketing itself seems to have changed a lot, where it's no longer so much about the product, but it seems to be really more about building relationships, building that identity, and people really want to sort of express themselves with the product that they get. You mentioned, you know, even without having any, like, a product, you had 2,000 fans on Facebook, and then you went to Instagram, where people were just sort of like wanting, I guess, the lifestyle. Like, you guys are really going up to San Diego. What are sort of some tips, because you guys are clearly executing on that pretty well. So any like tips or sort of maybe some 101s that you can share with people building a brand today on how to achieve that? Or maybe first of all, do you agree with what I said?
And if you do, no, absolutely. I mean, it's all about connection, you know, especially even in this time that we're in now. It's like connection is more important than ever before. Mm-hmm. People do want to express themselves. People do want to be, you know, individual, but they want to be part of a community, right? And if you can build a brand that has a community behind it, that has a mission, that has a social sharing aspect to it, is critical, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's where things really can like start organically working for you in a good way. You know, your product has to be shareable. It has to be something people can take photos in, people can talk about. You know, for us, we always try to wow everything we do. We try and create wow experiences. And even if that's like the brightest sunglasses we can make, like that's a showstopper on the street. People are going to stop you and say, yo, where'd you get those? Those are cool. Like, conversation starters are what we go for. Right. And the voice and the team behind the brand, the culture you build, like, it's not just like posting your products online and posting photos on Instagram. Like, there's so much backstage that happens, like interacting with the customers, surveys, feedback, you know, comments, like people, that's how you get people these days. That's how people like you, you know? And building a brand identity is not hiding behind your logo. You know, it's coming out and it's being open and it's transparent and showing people like who you are, you know? And it's not just painting the picture of this beautiful life. Like it's humanizing things, right? It's, talking about the story, talking about the people that work for you, like connecting and relating to people. I mean, that's what social media is all about now. So if you can build a brand that focuses on those things, like you're going to be in good shape.
Yeah. And I mean, I noticed that, like for instance, you know, we can jump into it when we look at the site, but, you're quite prominently featured on your story page. Right. So you're making, I mean, I think I've seen quite a few sites where when you go to About Us or things like that, it's just like a generic spiel on, yeah, we make the best X. Whereas you've really taken the time to introduce people to, you know, why you started the brand. Is that something which you started off sort of doing immediately, or was that from customer feedback when people were coming and they were saying, hey, I want to know more about you? And then, so you sort of responded to that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, honestly, I feel I wish we would have promoted our story earlier, like more earlier on in our, okay, in our business, I mean, you know, always. I mean, like, cause I did have a business partner back in the day, you know, up until 2016, and then we parted ways. And so the story when we first started was kind of more about both of us. And then, but it was really kind of geared behind, like, you know, the vision I had and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then after he left, like, then I just went all in on, okay, here's the real story. Here's what we're focused on. Here's how we're going to connect. Here's how we're going to tell it. And so I think that's super important, man. I mean, I really do, like, you know, like I said, like no one wants to connect with a faceless brand. You know, all the big corporations are faceless, and no matter how big we get, it's very important that Blenders always connects to people on the ground floor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like we be a $200 million business, but we can connect to Joe in Michigan that wants to be part of something cool. You know what I mean? That's the goal, right? The bigger we get, the more we can relate to everyone on the ground floor. And I think that's been the focus, and that's what we're trying to do. And it's harder as you get bigger. You know, you have more customers, you have a lot more going on. But it's super important that we always stay relevant and relatable, and real to everyone that we work with.
Chase, I think this is a great time to jump into the website. I think we've got everybody's curiosity all the way up now.
Let's do it.
So just hit share screen and then let's look at your website and just talk us through, you know, why you built it the way you did.
Gotcha. Are you going to share it? Are you going to share your screen?
No, it's better if you do it so that you can sort of control.
Oh yeah, let me do it real quick. Cool.
There's that green button at the bottom, and then
yeah,
just make sure you don't have any other tabs open.
I'll hide all my X-rated tabs for you.
Oh no, I mean my wife's got 50 tabs open at any one time, so that always ends up getting a laugh from me. Are you like the 50 tab guy or the very focused tab guy? I find there's two types.
I try to be very focused in the morning. That's my kind of goal, right? I'm always most focused in the morning, and I got to do one thing well, before I can do other things. But sometimes it's hard when you're a founder and you got a billion things going on.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So hang on a second. My share screen. Share. Oh, Zoom. It's not working right now. Hang on.
No worries. Should I do it? And then you can talk me through it.
Oh wait, here we go. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, cool. All right. Let me know when you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool. Perfect.
So this is our website. Obviously, so we're on desktop here. So keep in mind that 90% of our traffic is mobile, but a website always looks better on desktop. So I guess we'll just take you through desktop because it's bigger. So we have our pop-up here. This is kind of our customer acquisition tool that we get for first-time buyers. Kind of a spin to win. We get a lot of, 25% opt-in rate here, which is really good. Here's our website. And Blenders has always kind of gone out of the box with Shopify themes up until about a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. where we developed our first fully custom top to bottom website, which you see right here. I had no idea how much of a big project building website really is. It's pretty easy to build a Shopify theme or just to use a Shopify theme and then build on top of it. But here we have our own theme, which we've customly built, which has been super good and it's been working really well. We have our header image here. We always feature a really strong hero image to kind of captivate people. Shop men, shop women's. We have all of our top picks here.
Hey, I'm just thinking, is that also sort of an advice you'd give people just starting off? Like, don't even touch a custom theme till you've got your business going?
Don't even think about a custom website. I mean, it's way too expensive. Zero question about it.
Sorry, go ahead. Because I thought it was a really good thing you said.
So top picks here, just easy, super easy, right? Clean, add to cart. Always want to create less clicks as much as we can. Really strong product imagery with product tags featuring our best sellers, featuring some of our, Polarize is really big in eyewear. So we really like to highlight that. And we have our affiliates and ambassadors, basically anyone that wants to join our street team or become a rep for us. This is how they can apply and get involved in the brand. And then here's our blog. So this is kind of where we feature just articles that we, like to highlight, content that we like to write. So this is kind of our homepage. And then going into navigation, we have men and women, but a lot of our styles, keep in mind, are unisex, but this is purely just for a shopping experience. So it's easier, customer journey.
Are there any big changes that, you mentioned that you this is a custom website. So obviously I'm assuming it looks very different to the site you guys had before. What are sort of like those big changes that you guys made, and maybe talk us through why you made those changes? Cause I'm sure like based on some feedback or something, right?
Right. Yeah, no. So we got to a point with the Shopify themes that we were just basically buying a theme and building on top of it. And you stack so many apps and so many services and so many different third parties on it, and then you just kind of cannibalize it, and it becomes very hard to make it work. It's like a very
Frankenstein.
It becomes this Frankenstein, mess, and it's very, very difficult. And you kind of just catch yourself in a dead end, right? You start to scale, it starts to work, but it's not built to like plug in a million apps, and really capitalize. So. And so this was about a year and a half ago that we built a custom site. It was a very expensive project, but basically looked at the site and looked at everything that we do as a business and wrote it all down and basically built the site for exactly our business, right? Not every site is built the same. Like, you really have to have enough data to kind of look at and make really good decisions based off of. And so for us, that's what we want to do. We like really wanted to marry the brand story, the visual identity to the brand, as well as performance, right? And if you can marry those two things together, that's the goal. You know what I mean? Because most websites that look really good perform like shit. And most websites that look really bad perform really well. So it's like, that's where we fell into a trap with the Shopify side. It's like, you would look at our Instagram, and then you would look at our emails, and then you look at our website, and you'd be like, dude, how does this... this doesn't even connect, right? So the goal was to kind of make a full circle brand identity, so it matched visually across every platform, but also married performance. Performance is critical. And we have really good performance on our website. We have like, our conversion rates are like 4.5%. Mobile traffic's really high, but super easy shopping experience, right? Like I said, like, our price point's really well positioned to where you can see a Facebook ad, you can come in, you can click a product. This has basically everything you need. It has our Yotpo reviews. It has, how many reviews we have here. We have social credibility down here where it shows people that are buying. People like this pair. They want to add on a sleeve, add it to cart. Boom. And it's, you can go into the cart page. I'll take you through the PDP real quick too, but you can kind of see the static, see how the right side doesn't move. really clean, so you can kind of see all the photos without having to like move this button. And then we have our check the look. So this is kind of like our social credibility, so people can see what it looks like. Other recommended products as well as reviews. And these reviews are very, 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 very powerful. And so
you got that social proof, right?
Social proof, you know, sunglasses, people want to know how they fit. They want to know what they look like. They want to see what they look like on other people. You know, obviously people wear them on their face. So it's important that, you know, we can tell that story as well as possible. Here's our cart page. And, you know, like I said, a website's never done. It's never done. There's always stuff to be done to it. But just super, super simple, you know, and our checkout. So it's, you could see a Facebook ad blatantly, not know Blenders, click it and purchase on our site, be out in 4 minutes. And not really know that it hits your Wells Fargo account.
So. And I think a lot of that is to do with your price point, right? So everybody who, you know, is listening to this needs to really link that to what your value prop is. Like if you're selling like $300 or $500 products, then you probably need to have a very different layout where maybe people want to get in touch with you. But in this case, you've made the price point so like accessible that you're really just trying to get out of the way kind of thing, right?
100%. You know, yeah. I mean, our price point's well positioned. I think that's super important building it online, like especially like even during COVID, right? Like luxury is the first to go. So we are pandemic proof, you know, we're able to push through these times. And so I'm a big advocate for the MVP model, minimal viable product. You know, get a product that you have, that you can scale, that you can share, that takes photos well, that's lightweight, that you can ship easy. You know, all those things. There's so many out there. There's so many categories that people have done a very good job in. And if you could find a category that you're passionate about and that has opportunity, you know, you could do very well.
So what's coming up next? You said that, I mean, obviously a website's never done, but you're sort of like, what's on your mind right now in terms of improvements you want to make?
Yeah. So we have a lot of big projects in the works. We have prescription that's launching in July. So we're launching our prescription program. Blue Light is coming out. We're launching Blue Light as well. So, that's going to be another huge, huge project. We're also opening up our second retail store. I know it sounds kind of crazy given the times, but you know, it's not that much risk right now for us. So we're going to open up a second retail location because our first one's done really well. We have a lot of category expansion. So we're expanding our snow category. We also do snow goggles, and sunglasses, believe it or not, in San Diego, are very seasonal. So even at our price point, so we've captured the snow market and done very well. So we're expanding that line to helmets and face masks and, you know, neck warmers and things like that. And we also are going international. So we're going to be testing international this year as well in a few select countries. So lots going on in Blenderville.
Yeah, it's, I mean, with international, are you thinking of going like English speaking countries, or are you going to have to add multilingual options as well?
Yeah, we're going to start in Australia. We're going to go strictly English for now.
Australia, I think, sounds like a great market. It's very similar to the San Diego vibe, I imagine.
Yeah, and if we can capture the Southern Hemisphere, that's going to be really good seasonality for us, because going into winter is our slow season, and we would capture the Australian summer, which would be huge. We think there's a lot of opportunity there. We think prescription is going to be huge, because that's even a bigger market than eyewear or sunglasses. So yeah, we're continuing to move forward, man. We're continuing to keep our doors open. Like we're not letting this COVID thing stop us. And we're just going to continue to push on.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jess. I think this has been really, really helpful. Do you have any sort of like final thoughts for sort of people listening in who are starting their own business? And I mean, you've already shared a lot, but just giving you another opportunity to share any.
Yeah. You know, I mean, look, like I think big thing for me when I started out, like I thought you had to be super smart. You know, I really did. I thought you had to be the 4.0 valedictorian, you know, college graduate. It's just not the case. Like, you know, you don't have to be smart to be successful. You know, hard work outpaces being genius minded. You know, really focus on profitability. Right now, companies are valued at profitability. It's like the days of just scaling and not making any money for your business is not a good model. I think focusing on one day at a time. I think early on when you're building a business, you kind of get sidetracked by like the big vision, and it's really hard to articulate what that vision is. And so for me, I got carried away doing that. So really focusing on winning the day and focus on one day at a time, like what can you do today that's going to get you closer to your goal tomorrow sort of thing. Getting your first 100 customers is probably the hardest job you'll ever do in your life. At least from bootstrapping a business, maybe if you start with funding, you know, you'll have an easier time, but times have changed since we started, you know, like you could do it faster than we did it. Like you can, but don't get caught up on the overnight success. That's non-existent. It does not exist. You might read about it in a headline, but it's, you know, it's the lottery winners aren't around anymore. It just doesn't make sense. And find something you're really, truly passionate about, because if you don't have passion for it, like it just won't work. You know what I mean? Success tastes the best when it's infused with passion. I'll leave you with that.
That is an awesome quote. Hey, Chase, thank you so much. This has been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate it.
You're still here, which means you definitely enjoyed that conversation. This is a special COVID-19 e-commerce mini-series to help small business merchants out there get prepared. We're doing a lot more of these, so be the first to know whenever there's a new episode. Just follow DataCue, that's DataCue, on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn. Stay safe out there, everybody. Till next time, this is Sharam